Welcome to Take on the Lake. I've got a story for you.
Hey everybody, welcome to Take on the Lake with Lake Expo. This is Nathan Bechtold, and today we've got a really cool guest on. I think we always have a really cool guest on, but today we have John Buchanan joining us in the studio. John is, with his wife Sherry, the owner of the Tavern family of restaurants at Lake of the Ozarks. You probably are familiar with those. You've got the Tavern at Trails End, Tavern Smokehouse in Camdenton, and Tavern Trattoria in Lowry. So they opened those up, but John actually is a St. Louis native or St. Louis area native. He's been in the restaurant business for 31 years, and the dude has forgotten more than you and I will ever know about restaurants and food and how to make food awesome. So that really is our theme today. I've gotten to know John since he and Sherry came to the lake a few years ago. And I said, hey man, why don't you come on the show and let's just talk about how to make food awesome, because I've never had food at any of the tavern restaurants that wasn't awesome. So this is John Buchanan on the show. John, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us a little about background. I gave a little of background and stuff, but tell us like where you learned, I was going to say like cookery or the, you know, the whatever, sure. the culinary arts.
Exactly. Well, it really started with my grandmother growing up. You know, she's always in the kitchen, worked restaurants, you know, catering, that type of thing. So I grew up along her side doing it. And we had a pretty large family, so it was always fun batching big meals, you know, to feed his family. Mm. So kind of an inset passion for the arts, if you will.
All right. So yeah, as a kid.
As a kid, yes.
All right. And then you went to culinary school somewhere, right?
Or yes, East Central University.
Okay.
That's right. Actually in Union, Missouri.
Did that. And then from there, where'd you go? Where'd you kind of on-ramp into restaurant business?
So my first position, real position as a solid cook, I would say, would be a St. Albans Country Club.
Where's
so
that?
So that was in St. Albans, Missouri. It's one of the top-rated golf courses.
Oh, okay.
And it started there when I was young. I mean, I got that position when I was 21 years old.
Awesome.
So they have a chef title at that young was pretty cool, but pretty nervous too.
Yeah. Okay. So you did that for?
I did that for several years and then bounced around in the country club world, you know, okay. A little bit.
Yeah.
And then started getting to independents, left independent restaurants and went corporate for about 10 years and then back to independents.
Yeah. So can you even count how many different restaurants you've been involved with
how much
over
time?
The years?
You know, how much time, right. You know, I mean, I've opened several. I've actually opened 9 total.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, you know, so there's quite a few different genres of food in there. And that really is kind of what drives a chef. And that's why most chefs really only stay at establishment 2 to 3 years. Hmm. Because at most places that aren't trendy or current with their foods, you're going to learn the menu and then it's move on to something else.
Oh.
Because you're going to learn, you're going to tap out of your knowledge at that restaurant. You know, say you've never done Italian, you go to the Olive Garden, you're going to have that menu down, you know, in about a year, mm-hmm. 2 years, and then you're ready to move on.
You just get bored?
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
The true creative chef, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that defines you. As I've gotten to know you and things you rant and rave about. And
yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. So you opened 9. So then, 3 at the lake. So then 6 in the St. Louis area. Is that, did I count that
right? Yeah. So I hope, you know, I was huge in opening a Three Brothers restaurant that was in Labadee. One of my biggest claims to fame was a restaurant called Table 3 that was in Wildwood. And that's actually where I met Sherry at.
Okay.
Who is now my sister-in-law, is who I opened that with, Beth Williams, who opened that restaurant.
Oh, okay.
And it was a fine dining restaurant, French fusion. So something very, very different for the time.
Interesting.
And we would pack them in. I mean, our seating capacity was huge. You know, so we're burning and turning, you know, 500 covers a night.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Awesome. So yeah, you and Sherry, you guys are a dynamic duo. Again, as I've gotten to know y'all, it's amazing. You're the like chef creative guy and she's in there like wheeling and dealing with like the suppliers and I'll walk in to say hi and she's back there and she's got somebody that's got the whole like inventory of stuff and she's like going over it line by line.
She's definitely the financial brains behind the operation.
I love
for
it.
Sure. And we just work really well together. I know my lane and I'm excellent at my lane and she's great at hers. And not that I can't run budget, not that I can't run food costs. It's part of being a chef. But as far as paying the bills, taking care of the vendors, that's her strong suit.
Yeah. Does she ever have to get with you in there in the kitchen if somebody calls in sick and like?
Okay. So kind of funny, at Trattoria when we first opened, she actually had eye surgery, right? She had a cataract removed and she has a patch on her eye. She's not supposed to be in a hot environment and she can't lift anything. And we actually had our sous chef that couldn't show up. So she was literally on the grill cooking fillets, cooking salmon, and just slinging hash off the grill while I was over at Trails End, you know, keeping that one under control.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not that, it's not a strong suit. She's not creative by no means, but can she get down and dirty? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So you guys tell the story real quick of how it got started at Trails End, because you opened together, you opened some restaurants in St. Louis before you came here, right?
Yes.
I got a little lost on that story.
Oh, no, you're fine. So we really started at the lake like everybody else. It started off with a lake house for a reprieve. Mm-hmm. You know, we both live busy lives. We are working a restaurant together called the Inns at St. Albans. And it was a huge dynamic of three different allocated restaurants. We had a wedding venue. We had a fine dining restaurant. We had a quick casual. So we're running all that and got through COVID with it. And it just got to the point where we need a reprieve. We bought a house here at the lake, 2019. And then I absolutely fell in love with the lake. Started hitting a couple of the restaurants here. And since we're on the west side, there really wasn't a whole lot on the west side as far as fine dining or as far as trendy restaurants. And don't get me wrong, there's great restaurants there, but they're more family style.
Right.
You know, they're kind of your meatloaf, your fried chicken, which I absolutely love.
Yeah.
So, but I just kind of seen this need of having a fine dining-ish restaurant at the lake. Mm. And that's when we decided to do the Tavern at Trails End.
Okay.
And a place we picked was a long-running dive bar.
Was it Hurricane Dolly's?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, right.
Dolly Baker. I mean, what a woman right there. Man. So homage to her.
Yeah. And so you guys, I remember you telling me the story of when you first stepped into that place, and it was special, right? I mean, it was true dive bar vibes.
Like, it was like a dive bar met Cheers. You know what I mean? So it's like the good old boy club. You know, it's the same people that come in every day at noon. Mm-hmm. And there's literally, you know, a solo cup of cigarettes sitting on the bar.
Yeah.
You throw a quarter in the cup, you grab a cigarette, you know, you open the door, smoke comes out, everybody turns around and looks at you. You know,
oh,
but
that's great.
We went there and ate several times, and Dolly like would do the best prime rib, and it was such a, you know, competitive price. So we frequent there quite a bit and got to know some of the locals, got to know Dolly, and we started our search, you know, for the restaurants. And we looked at several here, you know, that you would probably know. Mm-hmm. And nothing just really had just a kick butt ambience to it. So for me, it's not just about food, but it's actually having a spiritual connection with the building. Mm. So how many places have you been that the food is great, but there's no ambiance?
Dude,
there's
totally.
No feel. There's no...
The place. Place is such place a big part it. Of an experience. Yeah. Place matters.
You know, and how many places have you been that had an amazing ambiance, but the food didn't match the ambiance?
Right,
you know,
yeah,
so it really goes hand in hand. And that's one thing that, you know, Sherry excels at is being able to... As she says it, seeing the forest through the trees. Mm. So you see this conglomeration of dive bar, you know, a Christmas tree hanging upside down,
yes.
You know, sports memorabilia, super smoky, you know, nicotine ridden.
The tables had the vinyl.
Yeah, it had the red picnic tablecloth stapled to it. You know,
I love
and
that story.
So we're eating dinner there one night and we got done looking at a bunch of restaurants. I said, you know what? Let's go have a beer. Let's go have a cheap prime rib. Mm. And we're sitting there. And she goes, I think I could do something with this place. It wasn't even for sale at the time. Mm. And then our realtor, Troy Myers, shout out to Troy, called me up and he's like, dude, I got your spot. I'm like, okay, well, where is it? And he goes, Hurricane Dolly's. And Sherry's like, no way.
That's funny.
Like we literally was just talking about this the other day.
Yeah.
And then boom, you know, we did, did a bunch of work to it. You know, took a lot to be able to get the smoke smell out of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now it's replaced with garlic and,
right.
You know, truffle oil and everything else. But yeah, I mean, so coming up on 4 years old on it.
The
now.
Entrance is so great. I mean, the front of the building is perfect. I love how I almost have to stoop to get under that, that front beam that goes across. Because this is an extremely old building.
I mean, you know, the folklore says 1852 is when that place was built.
Like as a French trading post?
So
is that right? Or something?
Yeah, started off as like a trading post and was a brothel. Actually, the name of the brothel is still etched in the logs.
No way.
You know, the Rambling Rose. You can walk around the left side of the building and see it etched in.
Crazy.
And then, went from that to, you know, used to be like people would have like potlucks there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was actually a kind of funny story. So we named it Tavern at Trails End after the road. All right.
Oh, okay.
Trails End Road is the road that it's on.
Yeah.
Like, dude, let's call it Tavern at Trails End.
Yeah, that's a great name.
Come to find out. years and years and years ago, it was called Trails Inn Restaurant. The road was named after the restaurant.
Oh, nice.
So full circle. We didn't know that portion of, you know, of the history. So it was kind of cool. A lot of the locals are like, dude, I think it is so awesome that you brought the name back. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
We planned that.
Yeah, right.
No.
Right. Not at all. Not. And then, so you guys ran that for a year and some change, or what was it? And then you got into Smokehouse next, right?
Yes. So we were right about a year and a half in, and things were getting stabilized there. You know, we got regular business coming in, profit and loss statements looking great. So we're kind of starting to look, you know, because we knew that we wanted to come down to the lake and open 4 restaurants in 4 years. That was the goal. So right now we're little 3+ into this culinary adventure, all and right. we have 3. So,
all right.
But yeah, so I had I'm sorry.
No big announcements on the show today.
No big announcements. Okay. No, not yet. I still got at least another year solid to get Trattoria, you know, stabilized up and going.
Yeah. Okay. So then Smokehouse.
The Smokehouse came along. A very good friend of mine, Mike Jones, had a restaurant there called Smokin' Jones. And he also had another place called The Outpost that he ran. And he was actually the first culinarian I met coming into town.
Dude, Mike Jones is one of a kind.
Oh, dude, he's a local legend.
Yeah.
You know, so we started talking even before Trails Inn was open, you know, we had met. You know, so I was bouncing ideas off because he's been at the lake. I mean, he's a figure here.
Yep.
You know, so I'd bounce culinary ideas and he was always super supportive, like, dude, you're going to rock this. And then when he let go of The Outpost, open up the Chop House,
right?
He's like, man, this is huge. This is big. And would you be interested in the barbecue, you know, buying the barbecue from me? I'm like, really? It was never my intention to have a barbecue restaurant, but I started to put some, you know, some thoughts into it, and it already had a decent following. You know, I had a great following. I'm like, you know, if I put my twist on this, I could make it mine.
Yeah.
And we did. So we purchased it, and now Smokehouse is 2 years old and rocking. Like, if you see that place during concert season, yeah, you're pressed to get in.
Nice. Great. And then from there you went to Trattoria, but yes, that was an interesting journey.
That was a very interesting journey. So we were looking for the third, and again, back to the ambiance.
Right.
The things that we were finding didn't have any ambiance to it. And it was a restaurant called the Bourbon Barrel kind of at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so
previously, most folks here, well, what I had known it as previously, was JJ's
at the iconic.
Yeah, the iconic JJ's.
Iconic JJ Copperpots with Joseph and Jeffrey. Talking about it to another, you know, two more like legends.
Geniuses, yeah.
I mean, what a culinary, you know, duo they were.
But at that point, it was the Bourbon Barrel.
Yes, yeah. So yeah, they had purchased the Bourbon Barrel. And unfortunately, the owners had some health issues. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they had a back out of that business. And they gave me a call. And it took me about 11 months to, you know, seal that deal. But it got shut down, and now the owners come and frequent the restaurant, and everybody comes in.
Great.
Matter of fact, Jeffrey was in a couple weeks ago before he opened back up for the season. He's like, man, I just got to get in here and check you out and
see
what you got going on.
People had to figure that place out for a minute. It took I think there was a learning curve when you and I talked about Trattoria specifically.
Yes.
Because it's Italian, but it is not like Macaroni Grill.
No, it's not. It's not. You know,
that was insulting. Yeah.
And anybody that, you know, one, knows me, or two, has been to my restaurants, know that I have a trendy mind.
Yep.
You know, and I don't like doing things like everybody else does. So that was a challenge at Trattoria, because people are coming in expecting classic Italian dishes.
Right.
You know, they're expecting
the elephant in the room here. Here we go.
Go ask.
They
it,
wanted
say.
Lasagna, and they didn't find lasagna on.
They
the
want
menu.
A lasagna. Yeah. They want their cannellonis. You know, they want their free bread. The you know, free olive oil.
Right.
You know, kind of more of a Olive Garden type of feel.
Right.
And don't get me wrong. Who doesn't love all you can eat breadsticks and all you can eat salad? Right.
Bring
here,
it on.
Man. All day long. But I wanted to give the lake something different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to give them a culinary take on Italian. And that's what it is. One of my number selling pastas on the menu is called Pepper Jack Campanella. And I did this pasta 20 years ago. You know, I was having a creative brain fart, if you will, trying to think, okay, think. Let's do something different. I started going through old specials, old features that I ran in the past and came across. I'm like, dude, that sold so well. I'm going to bring it in. So you got all this talk of not having lasagna, not having this, not having that. And the number one selling pasta isn't even Italian. It's a pepper jack cream sauce, you know, with a prawns and pork belly and chicken in this beautiful pepper jack cream sauce with the homemade campanella. And it just blows people away because it's something that they haven't had.
Right.
So it's like if people will get out of their comfort zone of what they think is, you know, a classic Italian or this should be on there or this shouldn't be on there, just give it a chance, be open-minded.
Yeah, it's a truly unique experience going in and looking at a menu at an Italian place and being like, well, I recognize some of these things, but there's a lot here that I was
I literally have a translation sessions.
Yeah.
Because I kind of split it up. I want to make you wonder, like, what the heck is this?
Right.
You know, like a lot of people don't know what tagliatelle is, you know, where it's more of a fettuccine, you know, shaped pasta, you know, so, but it also engages, it gives me a chance to engage with the customers.
Yeah.
Because I'm touching tables, I'm asking them, hey, got any questions on that menu? Well, what the heck is this?
Right.
Well, let me tell you what the heck this is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, one of the favorite ones is the radiatore. Radiatore in Italian is radiator. It stands for radiator. Not very sexy when it comes to a culinary descriptions. But that's the pasta. It's round and it's got little ridges on it and it looks like the old school oil radiators.
Oh, that's funny.
So it's fun to be able to talk to customers and say, hey, this is what this is and what this means and what you can expect.
And you're making all the pasta.
Yes. All the pasta is made from scratch daily.
In-house.
In-house.
Daily, from scratch.
From scratch.
Pasta.
Semolina, olive oil, water.
Yeah. And that's not just, I mean, that's easy to say. Actually, semolina is a little bit hard to say, but all of that is easy to say. But it's not easy to do. I mean, it's like there's an art to figuring out ratios and all that stuff.
100%.
Right? Yeah.
You know, so I'll give away a couple of the new menu items coming up, which the new menu should be out probably here in about 2 weeks.
Okay.
But we have a, you know, a bucatini that's on there, which is like a fatter spaghetti that's hollow. So that's a different formula. That's a different pasta recipe than just your traditional recipe. Because of the tube shape, it's a little bit different density. So there's always a little bit of play. And it took from the very beginning to now, it's still research and still tweaking and it's still working on things, you know, to get them, you know, as close as perfect as can be.
Right. So when my wife and I went there on a little date night, five kids, so it was already going to be special just because we got to get away for a minute. You brought out the tiramisu.
Right.
And dude, I texted you later. I was like, what did you do with that tiramisu? Because my wife was angry about it because it was so good. Because she had just made tiramisu for a bunch of, she's part of like a supper club, quarterly supper club. A bunch of friends come together and do this thing. And they had had, I don't know if they had an Italian theme, what it was, but she had been charged with making the tiramisu. And she was fairly proud of it. And had, I don't even know when she'd ever made tiramisu before.
Right.
So as she tried yours and was like, all right, I hate mine. This one's so good. What did he do?
Why
so
no chef for hire, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there you go. Hey, she's pretty good. So, and then, I don't know, did you want to share the secret to the tiramisu? Or are we keeping that on the...
No. I literally have no secrets. I'll give you whatever recipe that people ask.
Okay, so you texted me back. I said, what did you do with that tiramisu? And your reply, do you remember?
Yeah, I mean, the reply is that most tiramisus are, one, are really, really mushy. And they're bitter because the espresso, a true tiramisu has espresso in it. And I cut my espresso with Frangelico. So you have a nice little sweet, you know, but you get a little bit of coffee overtone. The cream is a little bit of a Madagascar vanilla bean, you know, into the cream. So you have this nice, soft, plush, but yet a little bit of firmness to it.
Right.
And it's, it's a magical piece of dessert.
It's not soggy,
no.
Actually.
Holds up really nice.
And I actually had to look up what Frangelico was.
Right.
So Frangelico is, it's a hazelnut liqueur.
It's a hazelnut liqueur, yeah.
And that hazelnut that it added to it, I think that was it, honestly. That was the thing where it's like, there is something really unique happening here. So, and then since you were coming on the podcast, I was like, hey.
Let's talk secrets.
Could you bring some of that tiramisu?
Oh, yeah.
So, all right. So, I'm gonna bust it out right here.
Do it.
This stuff is absolutely phenomenal. It looks very, very wonderful. The presentation here is outstanding, even though it's, you know, like a to-go situation wrapped up. So well done on
for
that.
For sure. You know, I try to make it look as sexy as possible.
Yeah. We got a beautiful little purple flower going on here.
Little edible orchids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Going here on the plate. So I'm taking a bite of this phenomenal creation. So with the elements of that tiramisu were the thing that I talked to you about. Okay. You obviously know how to do stuff with food that people don't automatically think about. Because, I mean, some people don't really cook much at all, but it's really become increasingly popular to cook at home.
Well, there are so many reels and so many, you know, the knowledge is limitless nowadays. Back in my day, we were still looking at cookbooks.
Right.
We didn't have the internet. We had encyclopedias. We had the old Escoffier cookbooks and the old French cookbooks. That's how we learned. Like, if you want to learn how to make a demi-glace, there's the book.
Mm-hmm.
There's no tips. There's no, somebody say, hey, oh, by the way, when it reaches 160, cut it off.
Right.
That wasn't there. You know, all that is trial by fire, literally. Mm-hmm.
I always love the old recipes that like come down from grandma that will say certain things or they'll just omit certain things. And you're like, how could you leave that out? Right. It's like, well, they knew that you should just do that, right? Like,
well, and, this part. You know, let's take our, you know, let's talk about Trattoria real quick. Our Sicilian Zugu. So that is Sherry's side of the family, third generation off the boat recipe. Mm. And it takes 6 hours to make the sauce.
Wow.
I mean, it's on the stove, reducing. And we don't even taste it until it has a 6-inch reduction mark in the stock pot.
Oh, wow.
And then it's finished with a pound of butter.
Oh, perfect.
You know, and mount au beurre is the French term that you mount it with the butter. And it just makes it super rich and sweet and meaty. And yeah.
Oh, that's good. So, okay, no, two things. First, are there food trends right now that drive you crazy? You said you see all these reels.
Oh, geez.
Are there things that are happening where you're like, ah, this is the dumbest thing. Well, I'll be ready for this is to be over.
Well, you know, let's talk about, you know, the allergies real quick. So not that celiacs or alpha-gal bothers me because it's a real condition. And if you really have the condition, that's great. But I'll have people that will come and say, you know what, I'm gluten sensitive, I'm gluten free. You know, and if that's really the truth, then great, I will do whatever I can. But I had somebody do that to me the other day and asked the server for more bread. They wanted the gluten-free pasta,
but they asked
for more bread. Like, I have zero issues. You know, you're the customer. I will come out to you and I will create a whole 5-course meal for you. I love doing it. You know, I got a lot of people say, chef, give me something that's not on the menu. And I love doing that. But yeah, so that's one of the trends where like, man, okay, I get it. If you have dietary restrictions for real,
right,
I do whatever I can. But don't make it harder on the chefs just because you have a dislike for something.
And they're not even
or you have your opinion on something.
Across the whole evening, that's right.
Exactly.
Yeah. But those have certainly, the different food sensitivities that are, like I said, those are very real,
oh, obviously. 100%.
It's been interesting how those have changed menus and changed the things that I'm sure, you know, chefs and people who are creating menus kind of go, well, I got to offer something for these type of folks now. And I feel like that's been in the past. I don't know how long it's been. Feels like maybe decade or so.
It feels like it, yeah.
That you see now, you know, menus at so many places are going to have something that are at least saying like, hey, this is appropriate for people with this allergy and stuff.
See,
so that's interesting.
But funny, and you know, you can take this either way. I don't have it listed on my menus.
Oh, really?
I don't have it listed at Trails, and I don't have it listed at Trattoria. Mm-hmm. One main reason, it makes you engage in conversation.
That's great.
You know, the customer will say, you know what? I have a gluten-free allergy, but I don't see anything on our menu. Let me be right back. I'll go get the chef. And boom, now I get to shake hands with the customer, and now I get to create a dish for the customer.
That's awesome.
And, you know, I'll sit down and say, you know what? Okay, well, you're vegetarian. You can have this and this and this, or we can omit this and add this.
Right.
You know, and so they basically get a, you know, intimate dining experience off of something not being on the menu.
Dude, that's cool too. And again, you do a great job of going through the restaurant, you know, like fairly regularly, whichever one you happen to be at that night.
Right.
And like, and just saying hi to folks. I mean, say hi to us, but we know each other. But just going around, I've watched you engage with people. Man, people love that. And I know you know this, but yes. In a restaurant experience, they love meeting the person who's like said, yeah, this is my like creation out
right.
here, right? I think there's just something, like we're talking about, the atmosphere matters and the building matters, and that part of the experience I think is so cool. And so, yeah, you coming out and explaining this is what that pasta thing is, right, at Trattoria
sure.
or whatever else. Anyways, I've always thought that was a really cool
thing.
You're not
you.
The only person, obviously, who does that, but I think that's so important.
It is. It's kind of a lost art. Not right. too many people do it.
Right.
You know, there's a couple of reasons. One, interaction between the customer, but two, I stand behind my product.
Yeah.
You know, to where a lot of people won't come out of that kitchen or scared to come out of that kitchen. But not only coming out of the kitchen, I have people that want to tour the kitchen.
Oh, wow. Nice.
You know, I have people ask, chef, can I'm like, come on back. And they're like, really? It's in the middle of the rush. I'm like, come on back real quick. We'll show you. I'll show you what we're doing, what the stations are and what they're producing. And, you know, where the thought comes from and the end result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. So let's go back to this question.
I got one more cooking trend.
Oh, cooking trend. Oh, yeah.
One more.
Go.
People. This is to the public, everybody out there.
Okay, PSA, yep.
There is no such thing as medium rare plus. There's no such thing as medium plus, medium well plus. Medium rare plus is medium.
Okay? I've not even heard this.
Yes.
I don't know
so
about
this. So this is very
this is what
frustrating.
People are saying. They're saying, I want
so
medium
it gives
rare
you,
plus.
Yeah, I'll take a filet medium rare plus. It doesn't exist.
That's like saying you want to cut something to like 1/128.
You're giving me 2 degrees. 2 degrees here to play with. You know, 5 degrees to play between a medium rare and a medium steak. From 125, you know, to 132. You know, so it's frustrating. That's frustrating.
That's funny.
But it also gives you a room for error on the customer part. Oh, my steak is not cooked properly. Mm-hmm. I ordered medium rare plus. This is obviously medium rare. Okay, well, it's 3 degrees off of being medium rare and 3 degrees under from being medium. Pick medium, pick rare, medium rare, medium, medium well, well done.
Don't pick medium well or well done.
Those are your steak temperatures, people.
Yeah, they're not supposed to pick medium well or well done.
Rant over.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's my rant, though, is if it's well done, it's not well done.
No.
I mean, come on now.
And
we're going medium rare here.
I will tell them. I'm not rude to my customers, but I will tell them. I will say, I ran a yellowfin ahi tuna last week. Beautiful dish. Actually, it was my chef Patrick's dish. He was my chef there. He's like, chef, I'm going to run some yellowfin. I said, do it, man. Do your thing. And somebody ordered it. Well done. I went outside. I grabbed the ticket off the rail, went to the table. It's like, I just want to make sure you understand that a well done ahi tuna will be rubbery and will be dry and will have no flavor profile.
You are going to ruin this.
And
this,
like this I said, dish. I'm not rude about it. I said, I highly recommend medium rare. And most of the time, people will take my suggestion because they don't know. Like, oh, okay. Well, I just thought, who wants to eat a rare fish? Well, me. It's called sushi.
Yeah.
Sashimi. Yeah, yes. Right here. But this person goes, you know what? I just prefer it well done. I'm sorry. I'll be happy to cook that for you. Back on the rail. Chef, well done. And we do our thing.
Did you see their plate after they finish all their...
They finish it all, man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They like rubbery fish.
Chef Patrick did a orzo pilaf that went with it. That went really well. And yeah, I mean, they loved it. So
nice. All right. So to the question.
Yes.
How do you make food so awesome? I mean, how do you make food so awesome? But like, how do you, the people out there in the world, what are like a couple things maybe that people can think about to change it up? I mean, again, we were talking about like adding the frangelica to this or different things. And
right.
Where do you come up with that stuff? I mean, internet, you go steal it from other, all creativity is stealing, right? It's all like you get inspired by somebody else. You're like, oh,
exactly.
I should do this. So inspiration, we'll call it.
That's a crazy thing about the culinary world, touching base on that. That's one thing I love this field. You will never, ever learn everything there is in a culinary field.
Yeah.
You won't. You can train classical. You can probably learn everything classical, but there's so many different twists, different hybrids, different fusions, so touching base with that is just knowing what flavors play with each other.
Yeah.
You know,
how do you learn that? How do you learn what flavors play
together? Just by experimenting and just knowing flavors. It's nothing, I hate to say that it's a gift, you know, or it's your passion, but it kind of is, you know, so either, you know, it's like I'm not a home decorator at all.
Sure.
But Sherry can do that. She can say, this texture goes with this texture. And we need to go more of an orange here. And then a dark tan will go with this. So it is an eye for it.
Yeah.
But for me, not only is it an eye, but it's also a flavor contrast.
Sure.
One thing that people freak out about at Trattoria is that I have this wonderful butternut squash ravioli. All right. So, you know, you just think of flavors, what complement flavors. Salty, sweet. You have your classics. Sweet, sour. You know, so you have this palette of flavors that hit your tongue at a different spot. So I took my butternut squash and it was really sweet. So I'm like, okay, well, it's almost too sweet. Let's do a fried sage brown butter with it. So a brown butter adds a nutty, kind of an earthy component, you know, to the ravioli. And then I'm thinking, okay, next up, blue cheese. Nobody would think 100 years to add some blue cheese, a blue cheese cream sauce to a ravioli. It doesn't even make sense.
Why did you think of it?
Because of the flavor contrast, because it is earthy and it plays with the sweetness of that, of the butternut squash.
Huh.
So by the time I was done with the dish, it was brown butter, the raviolis, fried sage. And then I went that another step and did a spicy and sweet candied walnuts to add to it. So now you got the mushy, you know, the mushy bite of the butternut squash ravioli. Then you got a crunch from the walnut, but you got a little bit of spice, a little bit of cayenne in that walnut. Mm-hmm. So you get just a hint of spice, and then you hit that earthiness of the blue cheese. And he's like, dude, wow, that's awesome. You know, so, but it wasn't
genius.
Like.
That's genius. That's what I mean. I would never get there. And I mean, you know, I'm not a chef, so that's all right. But it's amazing to hear even your thought process as you go through that. Because I'm like, man, Yeah, I would never add blue cheese. And then I would just add even like the candied walnuts. I'd just be like, oh, you know what? We got some of these sitting over here. Maybe we'll sprinkle them all on top, see what happens. You know, like, I mean, who knows what's going to happen? But I mean, you obviously had this kind of like progression as you created this thing because you knew what worked together.
Exactly.
So what are a couple things that people who love to cook maybe should try, like stretch themselves on? Do you,
with all of the seasonings out there, don't be afraid to season your food. Okay. So a little secret, this is at the Smokehouse, at the Tavern at Trails End, and at the Tavern Trattoria. I have a seasoning that I call the Trinity. All right. It's equal parts kosher salt, a roasted garlic, granulated garlic, and then cafe ground black pepper. When I say put that on my Cheerios, it goes on everything. Everything gets seasoned. The pasta gets seasoned. The pasta water gets seasoned. So don't be afraid to season. Mm. You know, one good thing about that seasoning is that it literally imparts everything. It's a base for everything. If you want to do blackening, if I do a homemade blackening seasoning, it has the Trinity in it. Mm. You know, because you have the garlic, you have the salt, you have the pepper. That is the basis of all flavors.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that's salt, what I'm going to tell the public. Don't be afraid of seasoning.
Okay. That's a good one.
Jump on Amazon. You can play around all day long on different seasonings. And some stuff I'll buy just to try. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a cayenne and orange, you know, rub for a steak. Hated it. I didn't like it.
Yeah.
But you try it.
Yeah.
Like, okay,
yeah.
Well, that didn't work out like
that. Just don't be afraid to play around with
right,
it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I love playing with curries. You have the base of a curry seasoning and a base of a curry paste. And like, you know what? I wonder what, you know, you got this nice pungent, a little bit of earthy, a little bit of spice. Let's add a little bit of, you know, allspice to it. You know, it just changes the profile of what you're doing.
Right. But that's more than just grabbing a total random like eeny meeny miny mo thing out of the spice cabinet.
No, there's definitely a thought process that goes into it.
Yeah.
You know, I love truffle oil.
Mm.
But some things it just doesn't go with. Mm-hmm. You know, and some things it will kill because it is so overpowering. Mm.
So, I mean, you went to culinary school, you learned like theory, right? Like things that work together and how to make certain things. Is there anything if a person, just average person, were to learn something like that, what is the thing that you're like, man, that was the most critical kind of foundational aspect of making good food? Was there something in particular?
So, you know, culinary is derived mainly from the French. Mm. Auguste Escoffier was like one of the first documented chefs. So it was the first major chef to start documenting and creating, you know, true blue recipe books as far as a teaching formula. So what I tell people, because I ask people all the time, well, do I want to go to culinary school? Do I not go to culinary school? Okay. I was way into, you know, my career, you know, before I went and got mine, because I already had a strong basis.
Right.
You know, but like for people want to cook at home, learn the mother sauces. All right. So the mother sauce is the original birth of all French sauces. Say you have, you know, Espagnol. You know, it's a sauce made from demi-glace. It's very rich, what people would call a gravy.
Okay.
Okay. But there's like 13 derivative sauces that come off of this one sauce. So learn your mother sauces. And you can literally just go on the internet and type it in. What's a bechamel? Okay, so a bechamel is the mother of all cream sauces. Your Alfredo sauce, you know, starts with bechamel. Mm. You know, there's so many sauces that come off of this one. So learn the basics and then create from there.
All right. So learn the mother sauces. That's a good nugget to take away. Like
yes,
home,
100%.
Home cook education right there.
Look it up on the internet. Everything's on the internet nowadays.
Okay, great. So that's maybe some like useful, helpful advice, because what I wanted to do is get a little bit inside your brain and the scary place in there. Yes. But because as I've gotten to know you, what I want folks to see is that you have this ability to create and to see what things are going to go together and to not be just normal and standard with the things that you create. I mean, like I said, all the menus Smokehouse is barbecue and barbecue is, you know, pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Right. But
you can only get so creative with it before when it comes not barbecue anymore.
Right. Yeah. So, but at Trattoria and Trails End, I mean, man, you look at the menu and you go, wow, this is not just like steak on the menu.
Right.
Or whatever it is. It feels like every single menu item has
like a thought, John's, has a purpose.
Yeah, plan and creativity kind of baked into it. And I think it's cool that people get to see that a little bit when they go there. I think it's cool they get to meet you.
Right.
And that was what I want. Have you ever created some items that were just total stinkers? Where you like,
oh, 100%. Watch it and you're like, oh. Yeah, I tried this this orange duck recipe one time and I overdid, you know, I was tasting it as I go. I'm like, man, not enough orange. I'm zesting orange and I'm squeezing more juice and I'm zesting. And by the time it was done, it was horrid. So yes, I've had some fails.
Okay, that's good to know, because yeah. for us normal folks out there.
I was three.
You were three?
I'm kidding.
I was like, all right, now I feel bad. Right. Nice.
No. But cool. Yeah, I mean, there's stuff out there that, you know, just because you have a mind for it and intellectually have an idea of how this is going to turn out, there are a couple of times like, man, But the thing is, what I enjoy is that I can fix it. You know, unless it's already pre-cooked and done and ruined. But a lot of times I'm like, okay, well, it needs more of this, less of this.
I mean, in that way, you're always kind of discovering, exploring. That's what exactly. You're saying. You're never done, right? As of learning how to,
it's never
how
done.
To create.
In the you know, literally at night, if I have a menu coming up, my brain will not shut off. It's just, it's going.
Yeah. You've told me about sitting around the fire with a drink in the hand, sitting there late one night. I think you were, I forget that maybe it was some recipe that you were like, oh, we should do this thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just doesn't stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah. It's no different. I mean, it's called culinary arts for a reason.
Right.
You know, because there is artistry that goes along with it.
Well,
you know, it is an art to me, not only, but it's one of the very few arts that uses all of your senses. You know, how many jobs out there only use a couple of your senses? Cooking uses every single one of your senses. Mm. So it's a wholly immersive experience for me being in the kitchen. Mm.
That's good.
Like, you know, a chaotic kitchen is my paradise. Got tickets flying everywhere and, you know, I mean, it's on. The adrenaline's rushing and you got, you know, I'm very strict. We got a minimum of a 30-minute ticket time. Like, go, go, go. Mise en place. I'm, you know, talking to the chefs. You need this. You need this. You need, where is this? You need to put that pork chop on. Flip the pork chop. You know, so this whole, it's an orchestration of controlled chaos. And it is the best drug in the entire world.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I'm glad you like it. That stressed me out beyond belief. If folks want to meet, I mean, you kind of split your time between Trattoria and Trails End.
Yeah, right? More, at this point, I'm spending a lot of time at a Trattoria.
Okay.
Just because it's new.
Yeah.
I mean, I still get new people at Trails End all the time, but I think I have a good foundation of what we are about. So I don't feel the quote unquote need to have to be there every night. You know, and let me give another shout out to Tavern and Trails End. Chef Corey Kinder is there and is my chef there. And what an amazing guy. So if I'm not there, you know that you have a qualified chef cooking the food, not only to my specifications, but he has his own creative realm
that's great.
He does as well. And he's able to add his own twist to the menu.
That's nice.
So if you are there, like, if I'm not there, ask for Chef Corey to come out. He'll come out and shake your hand, tell you what he's got going on. So
it's nice that you can feel like you can turn that over. And
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, it's not quote unquote passive income if the sweat's coming off your brow all the time. So it just got to the point to where I couldn't be at Trails End all the time because I had Trattoria.
Right.
You know, so but Trattoria is getting to that point where I'll be able to start splitting my time. I can go hang out at Trails End, shake hands, kiss babies, and then, you know, next day go go to Trattoria. Good. So
well, I encourage folks to check. I mean, I sent people there to Trails End and Trattoria especially, because those are really have always been very special dining experiences every time
gone.
So, and obviously Smokehouse, again, that's just like an obvious go-to.
Right.
So we'll just remind folks, if you don't want to cook, or you want a special night out, or you need to just be inspired.
Right.
Or maybe you even want to meet Chef John for awesome barbecue in Camdenton. It's
Tavern Smokehouse.
All right. For unforgettable Italian in Lori, it's
Tavern Trattoria.
Trattoria. And for the coolest, maybe possibly oldest building at the lake. Yeah. And a dining experience that you just won't forget. It is
the Tavern at Trails End.
Tavern at Trails End. John, thanks for coming on.
Hey, it was my pleasure.
Appreciate it. And that's our take on the lake. Thank y'all for listening. Stay anchored, stay curious, and we'll see you soon.